Good morning and welcome to the Monday edition of Times the Brief. I'm Harvey Kojan, and these are the top stories of the day.
It's time to party like you're upside down. The Stranger Things Season 2 soundtrack is here. By Ashley Hoffman. We're still 7 long days away from the highly anticipated return of Stranger Things, but the Season 2 soundtrack is here to help you party like it's 1984. The formative music of Season 1 set an eerie but reassuringly nostalgic tone. The second season's music explores new composition styles, but fans will recognize similar themes. Composers Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein are still serving up the 80s vibe with 34 synth-heavy tracks, including Ego in the Snow and We Can Go Out Tonight. Expect the original soundtrack to come out on vinyl, cassette, Jonathan style, and also CD, Not Ready For It, It's 1984. You can assemble the others in your Dungeons & Dragons friendship circle just by going to time.com and pushing play. Here's the full track list. Number 1, Walking in Hawkins. 2, Home. 3, Eulogy. 4, On the Bus. 5, Presumptuous. 6, 8:15. 7, The First Lie. 8, Scars. 9, I Can Save Them. 10, Descent into the Rift. 11, Chicago. 12, Looking for a Way Out. 13, Birth, Rescue. 14, In the Woods. 15, Digging. 16, Symptoms. 17, Ego in the Snow. 18, Soldiers. 19, Choices. 20, Never Tell. 21, She Wants Me to Find Her. 22, Shouldn't Have Lied. 23, It's a Trap. 24, Crib. 25, The Return. 26, Escape. 27, We Go Out Tonight. 28, Connect the Dots. 29, The Hub. 30, On the Edge. 31, What Else Did You See? 32, Run. 33, Levitation. And number 34, To Be Continued. Tesla's reaction to an average rating for the Model 3 sent the wrong message. The carmaker overreacted to an average rating for the Model 3. By David Z. Morris. If your Tesla being called average isn't just disappointing, it's worth starting a fight over. That became clear last Thursday after Consumer Reports published a new report rating the reliability of several new cars, including the prediction that Tesla's new Model 3 sedan would have average reliability. CR hadn't driven or examined a Model 3, but based its rating in part on improvements to Tesla's Model S, from which the Model 3 borrows technology. More broadly, Consumer Reports wrote that it makes predictions on every new and redesigned vehicle based on the manufacturer's history and data from vehicles that share major components. But Tesla wasn't having it, responding before the end of the day with broad condemnation of Consumer Reports' methods. Tesla declared the reliability rating lacked basic scientific integrity, in part because the reviewers have not yet driven a Model 3. Time and again, Tesla's statement continued, our own data shows that Consumer Reports' automotive reporting is consistently inaccurate and misleading to consumers. On Friday, Consumer Reports shot back, saying, Tesla seems to misunderstand or is conflating some of what we fundamentally do. The publication reiterated that its reliability prediction is based on a manufacturer's track record and is different from a review or a road test. Moreover, Consumer Reports said that an average reliability rating is generally a positive projection for any first model year of a car. Consumer Reports' initial press release that touted the rating even characterized it as promising. That makes Tesla's response seem doubly strange. The carmaker complained about a rating some other manufacturers might have been perfectly content with, and did it while impugning the basic integrity of a publication they've been happy to cite when it gives them good reviews. That has included the perfect 100 awarded to the Tesla Model S P85D in Consumer Reports road tests back in August 2015. Accolades from Consumer Reports, which Tesla now says are consistently inaccurate, are still featured no fewer than 6 times on Tesla's press page. As CNBC pointed out, even CEO Elon Musk has directly cited Consumer Reports results on Twitter when they're positive. Tesla gets top rating of any company in service. Most important, CR says 97% of owners expect their next car to be a Tesla, the acid test, Musk tweeted. But this isn't the first time Tesla has sparred with Consumer Reports, though the carmaker comes off as particularly thin-skinned this time around. And it turns out there's a reason for the overreaction. Tesla is in a uniquely tenuous position right now, thanks to what appear to be serious production challenges with the Model 3. On Friday, J.P. Morgan cut the fourth quarter forecast for Model 3 deliveries in half. Those issues, particularly reports that some of the cars have been assembled by hand while automated systems are brought online, provide legitimate fuel for concerns over reliability. Consumer Reports didn't even cite those reports in its reliability assessment, which could be seen as cutting Tesla some slack. Tesla had similar problems with the production of the Model X luxury SUV, but the Model 3 is a whole new ballgame. It's Tesla's bid to move from the luxury niche into the mass market, as outlined in Musk's long-standing master plan. If they can't pull it off, for instance, if the Model 3 doesn't live up to the sterling reputation of its luxury siblings, it could undermine that ambitious roadmap and the company's massive valuation. Of course, Musk and Tesla have shown that they can overcome early headwinds and accomplish stunning, nearly magical things. Betting against them at this stage ignores a deep well of determination and talent. But in this exchange, the company might have conveyed more confidence simply by keeping quiet. Gretchen Carlson, it's horrifying Fox News renewed Bill O'Reilly's contract amid sexual harassment claims. A new report claims the network knew about sexual harassment claims against him. By Alana Abramson. Gretchen Carlson has come out swinging against her former network after a report that Fox News offered its former anchor Bill O'Reilly a contract renewal despite knowledge of sexual harassment allegations against him. It's horrifying to think that any company would dismiss an employee following multiple allegations of sexual harassment and then allow him back on the air a few months later, Carlson said in a statement Saturday. The New York Times reported Saturday that in January, O'Reilly had reached a $32 million settlement with a network analyst who had alleged sexual harassment claims against the host, which reportedly included claims of a non-consensual sexual relationship. 21st Century Fox was aware of these complaints, the Times reported, but still renewed his contract in February for $25 million a year. O'Reilly was fired in April after the Times reported 5 women were paid a collective $13 million to stay silent about their harassment allegations against him. In a statement on O'Reilly's website, his spokesman wrote that the Times maliciously smeared his client. The Times printed leaked information provided by anonymous sources that is out of context, false, defamatory, and obviously designed to embarrass Bill O'Reilly and to keep him from competing in the marketplace, his spokesman wrote. Carlson, who filed her own sexual harassment lawsuit against embattled former Fox News CEO Roger Ailes in 2016, had her own reply on Twitter. Nobody pays $32 million for false allegations. Nobody. Jimmy Carter wants to help President Trump resolve the North Korea crisis. By Alana Abramson. Former President Jimmy Carter may be on opposite ends of the ideological spectrum from the current leader of the free world, but he's still offering to help with one of the most pressing issues, the crisis with North Korea. Carter, 93, told the New York Times he's willing to take the lead on diplomatic efforts with the North Korea government to contain their efforts to amass nuclear weapons and is even willing to physically travel to North Korea to carry out this objective. I would go, yes, he said, noting that he spoke directly with Trump's National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster in May when he saw him at the funeral of his former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski. I told him that I was available if they ever need me, he said. In 1994, Carter flew to North Korea for a meeting with Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-un's grandfather, who was the leader of North Korea at the time, during a contentious time between the two countries. After hearing that Washington was also contemplating a buildup in military capability, I decided to go. In the past, I had always refrained from going to a troubled area of the world without approval from the White House or State Department, but I hadn't been able to get approval. So I finally wrote President Clinton a letter and told him that I'd decided to go to North Korea, Carter told PBS of his decision in 2003. But even though Carter advocated for diplomatic measures, he still expressed alarm over Kim Jong-un, who he called unpredictable and said was capable of conducting a preemptive strike against the United States. I think he's now got advanced nuclear weaponry that can destroy the Korean Peninsula and Japan, and some of our outlying territories in the Pacific, maybe even our mainland, he told The Times.
John McCain takes a veiled swipe at Donald Trump's medical exemption from the Vietnam War. By Eli Mexler. Senator John McCain appeared to take aim at President Donald Trump's draft deferrals during the Vietnam War this week, following a series of public rebukes of the Trump administration. In an interview about the Vietnam War on C-SPAN 3, American History TV, on October 22nd, McCain criticized high-income draftees who avoided military service while apparently alluding to the president's own draft exemption, but he did not mention Trump by name. One aspect of the Vietnam conflict, by the way, that I will never, ever countenance, is that we drafted the lowest income level of America, and the highest income level found a doctor that would say that they had a bone spur, he said, naming the ailment under which Trump received medical deferrals. That is wrong. If we were going to ask every American to serve, every American should serve, McCain said. The president's 1968 medical deferment from the Vietnam War, his fifth, according to the Washington Post, was a frequent source of criticism during the 2016 presidential election. In an interview with the New York Times in 2016, Trump said he received a very strong letter on the heels from a doctor referring to the bone spurs. Trump has also previously referred to avoiding sexually transmitted diseases as his own personal Vietnam. McCain, who served 22 years in the Navy, has lashed out repeatedly against the administration in recent weeks. At an awards ceremony last week in the National Constitution Center, McCain warned a shift in American politics to half-baked, spurious nationalism cooked up with people who would rather find scapegoats than solve problems. In July, McCain cast a key late-night vote to defeat the Republican skinny repeal attempt to replace the Affordable Care Act. McCain and Trump have clashed publicly since the presidential primary, when Trump questioned McCain's military credentials and reputation as a war hero, claiming to prefer people who weren't captured, a reference to McCain's 5 years in captivity as a prisoner of war in Vietnam. McCain has meanwhile suggested that Trump apologize to veterans and military families, which Trump refused. More recently, he called Trump poorly informed and impulsive in an August op-ed in the Washington Post, in which he criticized the president's response to violence at a white supremacy rally in Charlottesville.
Justin Timberlake will headline next year's Super Bowl halftime show. By the Associated Press. Justin Timberlake has finally been invited back to the Super Bowl halftime show, 14 years after the infamous wardrobe malfunction with Janet Jackson caused a national controversy. The NFL announced Sunday night that Timberlake will headline the Super Bowl halftime show February 4th in Minnesota. This will be Timberlake's third Super Bowl halftime performance, the most for any entertainer. Timberlake performed at the 2001 Super Bowl with NSYNC, and he sang Rock Your Body with Jackson in 2004 in Houston. That performance concluded with Timberlake ripping her costume to reveal her right breast bare except for a nipple shield. During an interview broadcast at halftime of NBC's Sunday Night Football, Timberlake laughed off questions about a repeat of the infamous moment, which drew CBS a $550,000 fine from the FCC that was later overturned. "That won't happen this time," he said. Timberlake has won 10 Grammys, and the Tennessee native has also won 4 Emmys. He said the best Super Bowl performances have spoken to the mood of the nation. What I really want to do is take the opportunity to put together a performance that feels like it unifies, Timberlake said. I feel like that would be the ultimate accomplishment, and then the icing on the cake is at some point within that 12 minutes that everybody is shaking their booty. President Trump on North Korea, "We're prepared for anything," by Alana Abramson. President Donald Trump once again declined to provide specifics about his administration's plans for North Korea, claiming the United States is, quote, prepared for anything. You would be shocked to see how totally prepared we are if we need to be. Would it be nice not to do that? The answer is yes. Will that happen? Who knows? Trump told Fox Business Network's Maria Bartiromo in an interview that aired Sunday. Bartiromo had asked Trump about his relationship with China's President Xi Jinping and if that relationship was solely based on attempts to control North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. As North Korea's largest trading partner, China is thought to have considerable leverage and influence over the region. Trump replied that he and Xi Jinping have an exceptional relationship and that China was being helpful, although he did not elaborate. He's got the power to do something very significant with respect to North Korea. We'll see what happens, Trump said about Xi Jinping. In the past, Trump had criticized China in this regard, claiming in September that North Korea's sixth nuclear missile test, which detonated a hydrogen bomb, was an embarrassment to the country. While Trump has repeatedly used bombastic rhetoric to describe the situation in North Korea, his deputies have taken a more diplomatic approach. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said last Sunday that diplomatic efforts will continue until the first bomb drops. The president has also made clear to me that he wants this solved diplomatically. He's not seeking to go to war, Tillerson said on CNN's State of the Union earlier this month.
If you're searching for a new job, you've probably learned the usual tricks to boost your profile, like a killer resume and a snappy cover letter. But if you're firing off applications in the middle of the day or after work, new data suggests all those strategies could be for naught. Employment platform TalentWorks, which helps candidates find and apply for jobs, analyzed roughly 1,600 applications it sent on behalf of job seekers in recent months, and whether timing correlated to their chances of snagging an interview. And boy, did it ever. Between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m., applications have a 13% chance of getting an interview, higher than any other point in the day, they found. After that, odds drop 10% every 30 minutes and continue to trend down for the rest of the day, save for a brief bump right after lunchtime at 12:30 p.m. The worst time to send an application? TalentWorks applications hit rock-bottom returns at 7:30 p.m., when they stood just 3% chance of landing on an interview. It's hard to tell exactly why the odds are stacked against evening applicants. Hiring managers could be under the reasonable impression that job seekers who send resumes first thing in the morning are better candidates than those who do so at night. Or maybe they're just more charitable after a coffee break, a theory that supports results from a 2011 Princeton study on bias in the judicial system. Maybe it's a little of both. TalentWorks CEO Kushal Chabarte says they don't have data on when the person on the receiving end opens the applications or what would motivate employees to favor early birds. But in general, when it comes to hiring, there's so much unconscious bias, he says. This appears to be another one. This article was posted by Kristen Baylor.
All five former U.S. presidents team up to raise $31 million for hurricane victims. By Eric Jenkins. All five of the former living U.S. presidents made a rare appearance together in the name of hurricane relief Saturday night. They were even joined by current President Donald Trump, sort of. Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, and Jimmy Carter attended Deep from the Heart, the One America appeal. A benefit concert at the Reed Arena at Texas A&M University in College Station that has already raised more than $31 million for victims of Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. Trump also made an appearance in the form of a pre-taped video message that was delivered to concertgoers. to Presidents Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama, Melania and I want to express our deep gratitude for your tremendous assistance, Trump said in the message. This wonderful effort reminds us that we truly are one nation under God, all unified by our values and our devotion to one another. All of the former presidents in attendance, besides George H.W. Bush, spoke briefly to the crowd, and though they discussed politics, none of them specifically mentioned Trump by name. The heart of America, without regard to race or religion or political party, is greater than our problems, Clinton said. The concert, which was hosted by country singer Lee Greenwood, featured a number of rock and country performers, including Lyle Lovett, Robert Earl Keen, Sam Moore, and Yolanda Adams. Lady Gaga made a surprise appearance during the show and tweeted a photo of her with all the former presidents. More than 60,000 people donated to the President's Fund, helping generate millions for the victims of the natural disasters that battered America in recent months, according to the concert's organizers. Proceeds will be distributed into various charity and relief organizations throughout Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. The concert was not the first time the former presidents teamed up via One America appeal, though it is the first time they were all together since 2013, during a dedication of George W. Bush's library in Texas, according to the Associated Press. The five former presidents launched the campaign in September in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey and filmed a video urging Americans to donate to the relief effort.
Want to keep your heart and cardiovascular system healthy for years to come? Keep these meals and snack items away from your cart and out of your regular diet. Save them for occasional indulgences, at most, and replace them with heart-healthy swaps whenever possible. Fast food burgers. The science on whether saturated fats are truly linked to heart disease isn't entirely clear. When consumed in moderation, high-quality grass-fed beef may even have some heart-healthy benefits, says Dr. Regina Drews, Associate Professor of Cardiology at Hofstra University and Chief of Cardiology at St. John's Episcopal Hospital in New York City. But in general, Drews says, saturated fats from animals, especially when combined with carbohydrates, appear to have a deleterious effect on heart health. Avoiding fast food restaurants which tend to use lower quality ingredients and unhealthy cooking methods is always a smart way to cut back, she says. Processed and cured meats. Cold cuts and cured meats like bacon and sausage can be high in saturated fats, but even low-fat options tend to be very high in salt. Just 6 thin slices of deli meat can contain half the daily recommended level of sodium, according to the American Heart Association. The majority of people should be on a salt-restricted diet because of sodium's link to high blood pressure, says Dr. Lakshmi Mehta, director of the Women's Cardiovascular Health Program at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. Not everyone needs medication to make big strides, she says. Sometimes my patients with elevated blood pressure are able to make significant improvements just by adjusting their diet. Deep-fried foods. Several studies have linked the consumption of fried foods like French fries, fried chicken, and fried snacks to an increased risk of heart disease. Conventional frying methods create trans fats, a type of fat shown to raise the bad type of cholesterol and lower the good kind. If you're making a veggie stir fry at home and you're preparing it with olive oil and coconut oil, there's certainly nothing wrong with that, says Drews. But what most people understand as typical fried food, the kinds you don't prepare at home, should certainly be avoided. Candy. For many years, fat was branded as the biggest dietary cause of heart disease. But a report published last year in JAMA Internal Medicine revealed that studies funded by the sugar industry were largely responsible for pushing that belief. Now, experts say that diets high in added sugar may be just as big a threat by contributing to obesity, inflammation, high cholesterol, and diabetes, all of which are risk factors for heart disease. The debate in cardiology has pivoted from saturated fat and cholesterol to sugar, says Drews. If there is one ingredient I would say anyone with heart disease or risk of heart disease must avoid, it's added sugar in any form. Soft drinks and sugar-sweetened juices. For many Americans, the largest source of added sugar in their diets isn't from food, but from beverages. Recent government reports found that more than 60% of children, 54% of adult men, and 45% of adult women had at least one soda or sugar-sweetened drink a day between 2011 and 2014. Sugary cereals. Even foods that seem like part of a balanced diet, like breakfast cereals, can be loaded with sugar. Eating refined carbohydrates and sugars in the morning is going to produce inflammation and make blood sugar go up and down, so you'll crave more sugar throughout the day, Drew says. Instead, she recommends having fruit along with an egg or avocado on whole wheat toast. Cookies and pastries. Most baked goods, especially those that are commercially produced, are full of sugar and are likely made with saturated fats like butter or palm oil, or trans fats like partially hydrogenated vegetable oil. You have two ingredients that work with each other to give somebody the worst possible nutritional profile, Drew says. Margarine. There may be room for debate about the cardiovascular risks associated with saturated fats like butter. What's more certain is that diets high in trans fat appear to definitely raise a person's risk of heart disease. Trans fats are common in sticks of margarine that are solid at room temperature, which are often marketed as a healthy alternative to butter. To be safe, choose a soft, spreadable margarine that contains no partially hydrogenated oils, or stick with olive oil instead. Meat lovers' pizza. After cold cuts and cured meats, pizza ranks second on the American Heart Association's list of salty six foods. Other salt bombs to watch for include soups, condiments, and salad dressings. Pizza's sodium content, as well as its saturated fat, goes way up as you pile on extra cheese and meat-based toppings. When eating out or getting delivery, limit yourself to one or two slices and opt for veggie toppings instead. Diet soda. It may be fat-free and zero calorie, but diet soda has a dark side. People are under the impression that they're healthy, and they're really not, says Drews. Research continues to mount linking the cola to the development of heart disease risk factors like obesity and diabetes. Some studies show that people who drink diet sodas tend to overcompensate and consume more calories than they otherwise would, while other research suggests that chemicals in diet soda may actually alter gastrointestinal bacteria and make people more prone to gaining weight. While it may have no sugar, it's not a heart-healthy choice, says Drews. This article was posted by Amanda MacMillan.
Senate Republicans finally got something done. They should thank Steve Bannon, by Philip Elliott. After 9 months of setbacks, stumbles, and outright failures, Senate Republicans made good on at least one big campaign promise. In a vote last Thursday, the Senate passed a budget resolution and set the stage for tax cuts to be tacked onto it. The proposal drew unified Democratic opposition, along with GOP Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, who thought the budget's $1.5 trillion in red ink was too much, and heads next to the House, where its odds look promising. This is another important milestone for tax reform, White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders told reporters Friday. An announcement from the far-right Freedom Caucus later in the day was expected to signal cross-party support for the budget resolution. Instead of trying to split the difference between the House and Senate versions, it's likely that the House will simply sign off on the Senate version. That shortens the timeline for the ambitious tax overhaul by several weeks. Did we finally get something right? One self-aware Senate GOP aide said. Republican advisors on both sides of Capitol Hill were working the phones Friday afternoon to donors, hoping the moves late Thursday would restore confidence in the party's ability to move its agenda. Fundraisers in recent weeks had faced a revolt from their patrons, many of whom are losing patience with the party's leaders and sense a souring mood among the party's grassroots. Spooked at the threat facing incumbents, several big donors had entertained the ideas planted by former Trump strategist Steve Bannon. The Bannon mold of throwing the bums out seemed appealing and perhaps inevitable had the GOP gone home at the end of the year with nothing to show. Without delivering on the promise of tax cuts, the GOP's leading lawmakers feared they were handing Bannon ammo as he prepared a slate of rabble-rousing challengers. In that sense, the threat from Bannon helped rally on-the-fence lawmakers around the budget proposal. Some, like Senator John McCain of Arizona, were no fans of its details, but they also recognized failure would spell disaster for the party during next year's elections. "They bit the bullet," said one fundraiser for a conservative group. "They didn't love it, but they knew the alternative was worse." Senate Republicans also caught a break from their colleagues in the House. The House passed budget blueprint called for $200 billion in cuts. But the bet, especially among establishment-minded Republicans in the House, is that the promise of tax cuts trumps wariness of deficit spending. GOP lawmakers know they need to do something, details be damned, before the 2018 election season begins in earnest. At the White House, officials were also feeling like they had finally caught a break. A major piece of legislation, tax cuts, would likely be the cornerstone of many GOP lawmakers' campaigns next year, as well as President Donald Trump's re-election bid in 2020, seemed within striking distance. But even as officials were calling members of the Senate to thank them for their work and phoning House lawmakers to make sure there were no surprises, they looked at Twitter to see the president was back sending messages insulting a Democratic lawmaker. Why, the president's own advisors asked each other, couldn't the boss just soak up the victory? And that is why Republicans continue, even in partial victory on a budget, to fret. Trump has a knack for stepping on his own wins. Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, yet have consistently stepped on their own shoelaces. The conservative agenda ran into a brick wall of the GOP's own making. Even last week, as the budget was coming together and odds were looking up for the administration, many of the top aides throughout government bemoaned the president was his own biggest hurdle to getting taxes done.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Harvey Kojan, and you've been listening to the daily edition of Time's The Brief. To get this sent to your inbox every morning, go to time.com/thebrief. You can also subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the day.